About 10 after 9, we're gonna call this meeting in order. And get a roll call.
Hugh.
Here.
Michaels. Sexton. Strong.
Yes.
Taylor.
Here.
Carter.
Here.
Thor.
Present. Need approval of the agenda.
So move Carter.
I'll second. There is an addenda to the agenda.
An addendum. Is that okay? We got addendum, please.
Yes, ma'am.
So, it was moved and second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Need approval of the minutes for August 9th, 2024.
So move Straub.
Second Carter.
It's open for discussion, corrections. Seeing all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Do we have public participation? None, okay. Do we have communication from the committee? Seeing none. Then we go on to our engineer's report.
Need to approve the county and township motor fuel tax claims, Madam Chair.
So move Straub.
Second Carter.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, next item.
Yep, next item is the Kootenai Long Range Transportation Plan 2050 presentation. Susan is here from Kootenai to give us a brief overview of the Long Range Transportation Plan, so.
All right, thank you, Jeff.
She wanted to do a PowerPoint, but I was worried it would goof up the team's thing, so she's just gonna wing it.
We're
from
gonna wing
some
it.
Paper.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I've been with the Champaign-Urbana Urbanized Area Transportation Study for currently about 10 months. Before that, I was with the County Zoning Department for about 9 years. And so I'm somewhat familiar with what's going on around with the county committees and things, and I appreciate your time today. We have the Long Range Transportation Plan 2050. This is a web-based plan which makes it more accessible to residents and others who are interested in reading it. It's not so much a paper-based plan. And we've been working on it for about 2 years now. It's due every 5 years by federal mandate. And it's something that is one of the required documents so that federal and state transportation funding can come into our area. So if we don't get this approved by the end of this year, we are at risk of losing surface transportation funds and potential grant projects and things. So we're really hoping that we've done a decent job of capturing all the different member agencies' goals, projects, objectives, things like that to make sure that we're going to get that funding and also help plan for the next 25 years of transportation in our area. So QOTS, like I said, is just the Champaign-Urbana urban area, but for the LRTP purposes, we have to actually have a plan in place for the metropolitan planning area. And so that is the urban area, Champaign-Urbana, Savoy, Bonneville, as well as any area that we think might become part of the urban area in the next 25 years. And so that includes some rural Champaign County roads, some of the county highways, and also includes Tolono and Mahomet. So it's a pretty expansive area. Within the LRTP, we have 6 different sections of the plan that you can find on the website. I don't know if you have a copy of my presentation within the memo.
Whatever we sent over. the memorandum.
And that's okay, because I can, you know, send that, a link to that web plan absolutely later on, so. We have an overview, which includes a history of transportation planning in the county, and also some efforts that have been done, just to give an idea of what's been done in the last 2 years. We also have an existing conditions report that was done in 2023, and that includes demographics, transportation, land use, environment, and also census data from our most recent 2020 census. We also have a goal section, 2050 vision section, which is about the future projects and implementation, a public involvement section for what we've done in the last 2 years to include community input in what we've been doing. And then we have appendices that are just technical information about the models and tools we use to do forecasting, like population and employment projections, things like that. So I'm going to jump in with just the goals. Our 5 goals for this LRTP are safety, reliability, sustainability, equity, and quality of life, and connectivity. And under each of those 5 goals, we have a goal statement about what each of those topics talks about. And we have objectives that are measurable, and we have also assigned performance measures to each of them so that we can, over time, determine whether we're achieving the goals of the LRTP. And then we also have strategies, and the strategies are activities that not only QOT staff would undertake, but also the member agencies might have responsibility in over the next 25 years. So we also have the vision section, as I mentioned before, and that includes a status from the LRTP 2045 that was approved 5 years ago. And we are basically showing in that section, you know, how well if we achieve the strategies and projects and things like that. We have future projects, and we've worked closely with Jeff and all the other member agency representatives to make sure that the list of future projects is going to cover anything definitely within the next 5 years. And then we also try to forecast future projects according to capital improvement plans over the full 25 years. And we also have a scenario modeling section, and that gives details about things like, like I said, the population employment projections, and 4 or 5 different models that QOT uses to forecast how transportation system is going to function in the current status, as well as future scenarios that we are looking at to see what works best in terms of safety and connectivity and all those things that are part of our goals, so that we can best forecast what projects would be necessary over time. We have a funding section. The LRTP by federal mandate is financially constrained, so that means we have to show guaranteed funding and that there is going to be funding for all the projects we put in here. However, we also have what's called an illustrative project section. It has something like 57 projects that are prioritized by the member agencies, but that they also don't have any funding allocated for them. So kind of pie-in-the-sky projects in some cases, but in other cases they are listed in the capital improvements programs, but just have no funding allocated for them. So we're trying to cover our bases with including as many transportation projects that we can, so that we don't have to go back and do an amendment or something within the next 5 years, ideally, because any project that needs federal or state funding or a grant from the federal or the state of Illinois must be in this plan in order to get that funding. So we can do an amendment in the future if we need to, but ideally we're trying to cover our bases during this 2-year process. Let's see. Keeping this pretty brief, we have had 3 different phases of public outreach. And during those, we used to do things where we would have workshops and invite people to come in, but often we get maybe 30 or 40 people, and they would come in and we'd go over the projects, we'd go over all the ideas and things, but it didn't really reach out to, you know, be inclusive of all parts of the community and all populations in our community. So for the phase 1 outreach that was April through October of 2023. We attended 13 different public events that were already established by other agencies. So the Marathon Expo, Juneteenth, we also did some park things, like with the Urbana Park District, attending their neighborhood nights. So we've kind of been out and about, and that's, we use surveys on the computer as well as paper surveys. And we also had an interactive map online during that phase back in 2023 to try to take in any public comments about people's transportation obstacles, the paths they take, and any comments in general. Phase two of public outreach was April through July of this year, and we attended 12 community events. We had surveys and maps, but this time it was about goals and people's ideas of how the future transportation system should look, and also asking them to prioritize specific projects that were identified in the next 5 years at least that are identified by the member agencies. So we got a lot of good feedback. Overall, I think we hit about 800 surveys over the two-year period. We had dozens of comments that we integrated into how our plan looks. And now we're at the point of phase three, which is starting in September, and we'll go through November 8th, where we're doing the presentations at member agencies like here at County Highway, and at the cities, the municipalities, and others who request a presentation. We're looking for comments on the overall plan during this time period. We're asking the member agencies to make sure that we have included all the projects that, you know, should be included in the LRTP. And then we're asking for endorsements from the member agencies to make sure that we have some backing to show the state of Illinois and the Federal Highway Administration that we have put a plan together that everybody is okay with. Okay. So our next steps will be finishing a 30-day public comment period next Tuesday. So that we distributed paper copies of the web plan to local libraries, MTD's Illinois Terminal, a few other places around, so people could come in and take a look at the paper copy if they want. And then, of course, it's online. So we have been taking some comments, but not too many. We are going to continue to present to councils and boards through early November. And then we're going to organize all of the comments received during the whole 2 years so that each jurisdiction that has a relevant comment is going to receive those for their own planning purposes. And then we have a final steering committee meeting on November 22nd, where we will take any final comments on the draft from the steering committee members. And then we'll take this to the QOTS Technical and Policy Committee meetings for final approval on December 4th and 11th, and get this sent into IDOT and FHWA by the end of the year. So that is what we've been up to, and hopefully we've done a decent job coordinating all the different projects and ideas out there. So today, I'm happy to take any questions or comments, and like I said, I will send you the web link later.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a very long process.
It sure is. It happens every 5 years, so in 3 years, we're going to ramp this up again. And by that time, Rita, who you all know, will probably be retired. So,
oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that one.
Yeah, that'll make it more challenging. That's
yes,
for
it
sure.
Will. Absolutely.
Anybody have any questions for Susan?
Yeah, Jeff, what projects do we need to help us with?
The MPA, which covers like what Susan was talking about, the metropolitan planning area, there's not really a lot of county highways within that MPA. It touches a project that we're doing right now between Philo and Toronto in a very small spot. The majority of the roads in the MPA are either city or their township. So there's a lot of township roads within the MPA because they're the ones that kind of surround the community. But the county doesn't really have any projects that are involved in this MPA, per se, except for the one we're doing right now.
The only one that Jeff gave me a while back was the Curtis Road interchange and also the improvements between Prospect and First Street, that the county has a cost share in around, you said 2028 or so?
Yeah, whoever, with Savoy.
Yeah.
I know we're a member of Kuwait.
Yes.
This is sort of separate from a meeting you go to?
No, this is all, we take care of all this stuff through the technical committee and through the policy committee and then the steering committee. I've been trying to go to some, Jenny's gone to some of the steering committee meetings. So we have our input into it as well. Kuwait generally has helped us with like highway safety improvement project applications. Even though we're not in their MPO or MPA area, Rita's been gracious to help us put together applications and receive money for projects that are out in the rural area because we are a contributing member to Kuwait. Do you need any kind of vote or anything, any affirmation from this committee?
We asked for endorsement, and I don't know if that means a resolution from County Highway or from the county board, or if it's just something where we take your comments and, you know, integrate those.
I don't think we've ever done a resolution from the highway committee in
all right.
the past.
Okay, and that works for us. So I know that we do take them from the cities, but, you know, we're flexible about what we get. So.
All right.
So what do the committee, do we endorse what she's trying to do?
You can. I think probably appropriate to just have a quick vote saying we endorse the 2050. It's not really an action item on the agenda per se, but it's probably good for them if you have something from us, right?
That would be great if you're willing to. If it's, I know that you can't take action on the item since it's not an action item on your agenda, but we'd be happy to take any support you're willing to provide.
Can I then move to endorse the Kuwait's Long Range Transportation Plan 2050? Is that?
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Anybody want to add anything to this? Okay, well, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you, Susan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in.
I appreciate your time.
All right, moving on the agenda to the next item, which is a petition requesting and a resolution appropriating funds from the County Bridge Fund for Raymond Township. The Raymond Township Highway Commissioner had some erosion issues and some riprap issues underneath the bridge. Not really too extensive, but enough where we thought if we went and did the repairs now, we could prevent some more long-term problems from happening with the bridge. So he petitioned. We've actually already taken quotes on the fix. We had estimated around $20,000. The lowest quote came in from Big O Services at $20,396.98.53. So we're pretty close on that. So there's no awarding of it since it's just a quote, but I would ask for your approval of that petition and resolution so we can move ahead with the project to do the work under the bridge.
So move, Carter.
Second.
Second by Brad. It's open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Okay. The next item is petition requesting resolution approving appropriation of funds for St. Joe and Urbana Township. Probably can see on the map that this is relatively close to the urbanized area there. Just north of I-74. We got a call from the Township Highway Commissioner that somebody had alerted them to the fact that basically the underside of the bridge is almost totally washed out, to be very honest. And in our last bridge inspection, which was a year or two ago, we noted some small erosion, but nothing as significant as what has happened. I don't know which flood caused this to happen, but it went in and cut the soil out from underneath the bridge about 10 or 15 feet. So there's nothing protecting the bridge anymore. So, and I can attest because I fell down the slope trying to get down there to look at it. It is a very extensive erosion problem. So we actually did move ahead because of kind of the emergency nature, if you will, putting together some quick plans and took some bids on this project. And this is the project that's in your addenda here because we actually took the bids prior to the Highway Committee meeting. So they are petitioning for a $125,000 repair. This would be a 50-50 project. Urbana and St. Joe would join together and pay 50% based on their assessed valuations, and then the county would pay 50% from the county highway funds. As you can see there, the bids came in at the low bid was $121,979. Which seems like a lot of money, but it's a big project, and there's really no way for them to get underneath the bridge except bring maybe a crane or a large excavator and set equipment down into the stream, and then they're going to have to dump the riprap, probably take the rail off the bridge, dump the riprap over the edge of the bridge, and then they're going to have to use their equipment to put in basically 10 feet of riprap underneath the bridge on both sides, and then wow. Slope it and then grout it. And so it's a pretty extensive project. So I would ask for your approval of that petition and resolution, which also awards that contract to Stark Excavating in the amount that I stated, the $121,000.
So moved, Straub.
I'll second.
We moved in second, so before discussion. Have you closed the bridge?
No, we didn't. We were worried if we didn't get to this quickly, that might be the next step, but we did not close the bridge. It'll be closed while they're doing the work, but it's not closed currently to traffic. Stark will probably get started as soon as the county board, we've already sent the contracts to Stark, as soon as the county board approves this resolution and we get the contract signed, I would assume by very early November, they'll be out there doing the work.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
All right, the next item is the solar panel agreement resolution authorizing the county engineer to describe to sign the resolution for generating service agreement. You see up on the screen, we have some folks here from Nania, which is a solar consultant company. We have Becky and Aaron who are here. I've been wanting to do this for a number of years, put solar on the highway department, simply because 95% of the power that we use here is electric because we have geothermal for all of our heating and cooling. The only gas we really use is some small heaters out in the mechanics bay, so we chew up a lot of energy here. And we've got wonderful roofs that are facing south where we can grab the energy through solar panels. The fortunate thing is that, or unfortunate, however you want to look at it, is we had that hailstorm a few years ago. We got a brand new roof on the highway department now, so probably a good time to move forward because the solar panels are supposed to last 25 to 30 years. Hopefully the roof lasts a lot longer than that if we don't get another hailstorm. But Dana had a relationship with this company from previous things and doing things with energy. So he suggested that we work with them to come up with a solar feasibility study. And what would happen is they've done the solar feasibility study and they're going to present that here up on the screen, and then I would sign the contract with them, and they would basically be our consultant that helps us put together the RFP to do the actual solar installation. So can you guys hear us there, Becky and Aaron?
Yeah, we sure can. All can right. You hear us okay?
Absolutely, absolutely. So fantastic. You guys want to kind of go through the solar feasibility study?
Absolutely, yes. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. And I said my regrets that I'm not there in person. Kiddos are on fall break, so so thank you for the flexibility and being able to attend virtually, and I look forward to the opportunity to meet you in person. So as Jeff spoke to, thank you for that introduction. I've known Dana for many, many years. Our firm is about 25 years old, and we specialize in energy management savings. And that is vague because energy is large and far-reaching, and that could be everything from the rate that you pay on your invoices to Ameren, all the way to how much energy you actually are consuming at your location. And so joining me today is Aaron Raftery from our Solar and Efficiency Division. And so I'm just going to give a brief introduction of who we are so that you understand the kind of the perspective of how we're providing some of the things that we're going to discuss today. And then Aaron will follow up with the actual feasibility study, which is the actual layout of the projected solar array and its estimated version, and what that potential financial options would be if you chose to move forward with that. So as I mentioned, we're advisors, so we are not developers. We do not sell solar panels. We are here to determine the viability of solar and see if it makes sense economically, but also within your specific space. So we evaluate from a high level your roof age, your location, take all that into consideration, and then build out performa models of the financial options that you have given all of the current incentives. So Aaron will be describing several of the incentives, both at the federal and the state level, that are currently available to the County of Champaign and specifically to the Highway Department that make this a more viable option than even a few years ago. So Jeff had mentioned that this is something that he's been looking at for many years, and not only is the timing right, I think, from a structural perspective with the newer roof, but also from a financial perspective, because there are incentives that are available to you now being a non-taxing entity that even a few years ago, the only way you could have achieved those incentives was through a third party. So just a little bit about our process. We really represent an unbiased approach to this. We are here to sit on the side of the county and guide you through kind of all of the big gray area that is the world of solar. Things are constantly moving, changing, and evolving. It's a little bit of the Wild West sometimes. And so we're here just to provide that, like I said, unbiased approach, point of information, and help determine, does this make sense? And if so, help to create the most competitive atmosphere that we can to get as many bids as we can for the project, should you choose to vote to move it forward, and ultimately secure you the best rate, but also with the best company and the best value for the project so that it goes off swimmingly. We take it very seriously that this is a long-term commitment to an electrical infrastructure that is tied to your building. You take pride in your buildings and the upkeep that you have, and as you should, they're beautiful. And so we want to make sure that the process goes off seamlessly, should you choose to engage with that. We provide the feasibility studies at no cost. Again, it's kind of self-serving because we want to determine the viability of these projects before we move forward. So the feasibility studies and everything that we're conducting today are free of charge. It's just part of the investigative process up front to determine if you wanted to move forward. And then the next steps, should you wish to engage, the Nenea Energy Services contract that is part of your board packet would be then to take us on as that consultative role to then issue a competitive RFP on behalf of the county, solicit bids, follow Illinois procurement code, and then help you kind of evaluate what those options are before you ultimately would sign an agreement with the developer, and then they would be responsible for the final design, engineering, and implementation of the project. So we're here just to help you align with the best partner possible and also help you kind of navigate the muddy waters is very much our role in here today. So with that, I will introduce and pass over to Aaron, who will share our screen. These feasibility studies are also in your board packet. Today, we will be covering the option for a 100% offset of your energy consumption at the County Highway building.
Great. Thank you, Becky. Jeff, is my audio coming through all right?
Yes, you're good.
All right, and you can see my screen now, a solar feasibility study?
Yep.
Okay, all right, so hi, everyone. Ditto everything Becky just said. Hopefully next time we'll be there in person with you. But I typically like to move during, especially during, you know, meetings like this, I do typically try and move through the study relatively quickly and then kind of give you time to kind of linger on whatever points you want to spend time on with questions or discussion. So that's what I'll do here. So like Becky said, this is a feasibility study. This is just a tool to kind of give you an idea of what a project might look like and if it's something that you want to continue to look into. We do aim to put these together from a conservative standpoint, and so if we were to oversee a competitive RFP process, we would expect the numbers to get better, not worse. So this first page that we can see here is just a initial design for the solar array. The blue rectangles represent solar panels. You can see this bottom part of the facility is the south facing portion of the roof that Jeff mentioned. So really looking to fill that up as much as possible. And then we cut it out. You can see like there's quite a bit of additional roof space here. There's no need to go any bigger because this, what we see here would provide 100% of the building's annual electricity needs. There's no financial advantage to going above 100%, and so no need to buy solar panels that aren't going to give you financial value. But I would say if you ever do add additional electrical infrastructure at this site, you have additional space on that roof if you want to if you want to increase the size of that solar array or do anything like that. So at all the points that Jeff made and then adding that, like this actually is a really nice application for solar of the ones that we've seen. As far as kind of checking a lot of the boxes. This page is kind of our executive summary page. So at the top, we have some system information. You can see the pie chart here. We're just showing that 100% of the building's annual electricity needs are coming, being provided by the solar array. In terms of the system size, if you're talking to solar companies, they'll refer to this number, which is 216 kilowatts. The financials on this page are if the county were to pursue a capital purchase for the project, which I think is probably going to be the most attractive option as far as long-term savings, but there's an additional option for a long-term power purchase agreement, which is kind of a third-party financing option that we've also got as the last page of this document. But on this page, it's the financials are if you were to buy the system like you would any other capital purchase. The overall project cost is this, a little under $540,000. That's intended to be an all-in project cost, so that's materials, labor, engineering, you know, that interconnection with Ameren, all that, right? So this is, like I said, it's a turnkey kind of all-in project cost, and it should be conservative. So and then on this page we have what we call the first year incentive amounts. There's some additional state incentives we'll talk about on a later page, but these are incentive programs that pay out, say, within the first 12 months after the project's put in place. I think the important point here is both of these incentives are, or all of the incentives we're going to talk about today, are reimbursement incentives. So the county would be on the hook for this $530,000 upfront under this scenario, and then they would be receiving these incentives after the project's put in place. So here's about $145,000 is the federal incentive that Becky mentioned. We call it tax credit. That's kind of unfortunate naming, but that's not our, you know, that's not our terminology. This was previously only in the form of a tax credit, and something new in the last couple of years is for non-tax paying entities such as yourselves. This is available in the form of a one-time payment from the federal treasury. There's a nice Ameren rebate, a little under $54,000. That usually pays out within about 2 months after the project's put in place. So here we have the net first year system cost of $340,000. We have a detailed cash flow analysis on a later page of the assessment, but we're kind of jumping to the chase here. Again, this is the executive summary page. So simple payback, you can see, is a little over 5 years. like Jeff mentioned earlier, we do look at these systems as having a 25 or even a 30-year asset life. In our RFP language, we're typically standardizing on kind of like a tier one product where you can get a 25-year warranty. And so for that reason alone, and not only that reason, but we tend to look at these as a 25 or 30-year asset life. Your roof life should be 50 years, hopefully, pending any additional hailstorms. For the reasons I just said, we put together a 30-year cash flow analysis for you. Again, look, think of it as a 30-year asset life, and you can see you're at the bottom of the page here. You're saving. We're expecting you to save over $1 million over that 30-year time horizon. And I want to just kind of reiterate again: these numbers are conservative, both in terms of the first cost associated with the project, but then also in terms of the long-term savings. So happy to talk about some of the assumptions there if anyone wants to get in the weeds. But just generally speaking, we expect this number to be conservative, and so if anything, you know, the project should just save more beyond what we've projected here. This page at the top, on the last page we said that on an annual basis, the system will produce 100% of the building's electricity needs. In this case, you can see how that shakes out on a monthly basis. Blue bars represent the monthly electricity usage of the building, and the green line represents the monthly solar production. So you can see you're overproducing quite a bit in the summer months, and again on an annual basis the two offset each other completely. The bottom of the page, we have the positive environmental attributes for the project, and so this is it provides you with this information to kind of do with as you see fit. If this is an important part of the project narrative for you, then happy to talk more about this. If it's not, that's totally up to you. And then on this fourth page, most of the numbers at the top are repetitions of numbers we already talked about on the executive summary page. What's really new here, I think, is the 30-year cash flow analysis that we provide you with. A couple things we say here. One is, especially for a new metal roof like you have here, I do think a 30-year asset life is appropriate, but if for some reason you had a shorter time horizon that was of compelling interest to you, this page allows you to kind of hone in on that time horizon, right, whether that's 25 years, 20 years, whatever that is. It gives you the cash flow estimates for that. And then a couple other things on this page. I think this SREC value column, these are Illinois state incentives that are available for the program. And you can see these are pretty lucrative. These are $200,000 in total incentives for the project, but they're quite a bit slower to pay compared to the federal and Ameren rebates. So they pay out over a 7-year time horizon. And then this value of solar column, this shows your annual electricity cost savings associated with generating your own energy there on site. And so you can see you save about $35,000 or so once the project is put in place. Okay, then this to the last page. This is that third. If for some reason the county did not want to put up the money for the project to begin with, maybe you had other uses of that capital or things like that. This is an arrangement, kind of third party financing, where it's called a power purchase agreement. There's no differences in the system attributes. It's the same system, same offset 100% of the building's electricity needs. In this case, that third party installs the system at no first cost to the county, no debt obligation, nothing like that. What you agree to do is buy the power from the solar array at a predetermined energy rate. And what's key is you want the energy rate to be lower than what you're paying for grid power. So for example, you're currently paying about 13 cents per kilowatt hour for grid power. We did a billing analysis for you and came up with that estimate. What we'd expect you to get is about a 30% reduction in energy rates if you were to do this power purchase agreement. You get we have 8.84 cents per kilowatt hour as a fixed rate over the entire contract length, which in this case is a 25-year term. So they put up the money, they install the system, they sell you the power, and it's lower than what you can get for grid power is kind of the basic idea. But I think an important thing here is you're going to save quite a bit less money under this scenario compared to if you were to buy the system yourselves. So Here we have a 25-year term listed. You see your savings are about $465,000 or so in total over that 25 years. And if we go back to the last page and kind of compare it to the, if you were to buy the system outright, you see you're at about $860,000 or so savings. So right, about half, you know, it's similar to what we see in other scenarios. You can assume that you're going to save about half or so through that power purchase agreement. So it's important to be aware of the options that are available to you, but I would say by far most of our public customers, since this federal incentive became available for non-taxpaying entities, most of our public customers are buying the systems themselves. So that was a lot of information to throw at you, but you know I wanted to get through it, and happy to if there's questions or anything else you want to talk about with the study, you're happy to do that now.
Anybody have any questions that they?
How many panels?
How many panels are we looking at, Aaron?
Yeah, the panels. Let's look. 366 is what this design calls for. These are large commercial panels. These are like I think like 3.5 feet by 6 feet or so in terms of the form factor of the individual panels. So these are quite a bit larger than what you see on a residential application. But yeah, 366 is the answer.
What is the weight of each panel?
The weight of each panel, she was asking roughly.
Oh, that's a good question. That keeps going down. I think I would. You're going to be somewhere between 10 and 20 pounds per panel to give you a product. I can follow up with an exact weight for you, but that's the approximate weight. The one nice thing about these metal roofs, you have there's metal seams sticking up, right? Like these panels will attach directly to the metal roofs, mm-hmm. and so as opposed to a flat roof scenario where you don't have those metal seams to attach to, you need to actually weigh the panels down with cinder blocks to keep them, you know, to keep them on the surface. So for whatever that's worth, this is actually, there's gonna be quite a lot less dead load on this, with this array compared to other rooftop applications.
Hey, Joe, I have a question.
Yeah.
Would there be any benefit to adding additional panels in anticipation of electric vehicle charging stations initially, or would that be better accomplished to frame that based on what your needs are when those charging stations would be placed?
So they were asking about the future need for electric charging stations and what additional panels might be required to get ready for that, or whether we should just wait until we know what that load might be, and then we could add on in the future, which is the better way to go.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, obviously there's, you know, some personal preference on your end, right, to factor into that. But generally speaking, our recommendation is if you have definite plans that are within, call it the next year, or maybe two at most, you know, and again, I want to emphasize definite plans, right? Like, That scenario, I think it's perfectly fine to get ahead of yourself a little bit with and over-design the solar array to accommodate that future load. If the plans are a little bit less definite, or if they're a little further out, then our recommendation is to wait to you know, design the system, install the system based on the current load, and then add to it once the plans and schedule aligns on that on the later infrastructure.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at is the difference in purchasing or leasing the solar panels, right?
You're buying, so somebody else owns the solar panels in the second one, and we buy the power from them. Okay. So that is not the option that Dana and I are recommending. We're recommending to buy the panels, right. Own the panels. Mm-hmm. We're going to get, you know, $1.1 million in solar savings over the life of the system. Right. That just seems like the best way to go. Mm-hmm. I know the capital outlay in the front is pretty big, but we do have budget reserves at the highway department that we can use. Within 5 years, we're back to basically we've made the money back that we spent on them in the first place. So,
what's the monthly cost for energy here?
Well, if you look at his his cost annual.
That's what I thought, right?
Cost for energy is about $35,000 right now. So you're looking at $3,000 a month, roughly, is what we're paying out for just electricity. We got a little bit of gas as well. But yeah, it's pretty significant. It's a lot more in the winter because we heat that area out there with our geothermal. The good thing about the solar systems of now, if you look at that chart right there, used to be you had to put batteries in and store the power and all that kind of stuff, and now they have what they call net metering, where if we make more power than we use, it goes back into the grid and we get a credit from Ameren for that power that we didn't use. And then you can build up those credits over the year. And then in the winter time, when we're using a lot more power and we're not generating as much, we draw from those credits. So
that sounds like a win.
Yeah, it's definitely a good system. And like they said, it used to be I put solar panels on my house and I got a 30% tax rebate from the feds when I did my federal taxes, and that didn't used to be offered to governmental agencies because we don't pay taxes. Mm-hmm. But within the last couple of years, now that 30% is being offered to government agencies as well, so that makes it even more viable for us to buy the panels.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks for explaining that to me.
You bet.
Jeff, get this in before December. My understanding is that we'll be grandfathered in with net metering. Is that the plan you're looking at?
So, Becky or Aaron, I know we talked about this, about the whole net metering thing, and it's going away for personal solar systems. But my understanding from you guys is that is not going away for these types of systems, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, the upcoming change in January is for residential and like really small commercial accounts. So it wouldn't be, it's not applicable to this project.
That's great to know.
But if any of the committee members are considering solar on your home or small business, right, then that would be applicable. So
you better
it's worth,
not
no, worth
yeah.
being aware of.
Those people are full.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brett.
Quick question. I know the solar panels lose a little bit of efficiency over time. So if it's doing enough right now for 30 years, for right now, after 30 years, how much are we going to lose? And should we be thinking about adding additional panels for the future, possibly?
Yeah. Should I go ahead and respond to that, Jeff?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's a good point as well. So the you are going to see a little degradation on your solar panels year over year. Again, kind of assuming we're standardizing on kind of a tier one product, that degradation should be like zero, on the order of like 0.3 or 0.4% year over year. And our cash flow analysis for you and our production estimates on the back end as well, we built in an annual degradation of 0.7%, and so about double what you'd expect, you know, what should actually be the case. And so these year over year projections actually take into account that degradation. And then the other thing I'd say on these tier one panel products, you can get a performance warranty of about 25 years. That the system usually they kind of bottom out at about 20% total loss or so over that time horizon. You know, and so that's about what I would expect. I probably wouldn't. It's a good question. I think that, you know, none of us have crystal balls about what this world's going to be like 30 years from now. You know, so I think it certainly could be a possibility that the county may, you know, the county may want to replace those panels in year 30 because there may be some higher efficiency products available or things like that. But it certainly will be, you know, it certainly will be an option for the county to continue to leave them up there and continue to produce energy because they won't have lost all that much energy. And frankly, it's factored in the analysis. So you can see, you know, see for yourselves kind of what to expect there.
Yes.
Yeah. Once we do the RFP and the vendor is chosen, are we then locked into them for any future expansion for the next 25 years, or can we choose other vendors?
Did you hear the question, Aaron?
I did, yeah. That's a good question, too. So I would say, so if you were to buy the system yourselves under this, you know, kind of this first option that we presented, then you are not locked into that vendor. In any way, you know, you could redo a new RFP, right? You could, you know, like you own that system. They design it and build it, and then they kind of turn it over to you, right, to own and operate it for the life of the array. Alternatively, if you did this third party option that we showed at the end of the, which I know it doesn't sound like the county's really leaning towards, but I just to be kind of comprehensive in the analysis, if you did this third party option, you likely would be locked in for any future enhancements to that system. You wouldn't need to go through that same third party provider because they would own, you know, they would own that asset on your roof surface.
I have two follow-ups.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I just lost one of them in my mind. As far as hailstorms go, back up. The one that we were just talking about, I'm not familiar with commercial sized solar stuff, but I'm assuming that it's at a standard at this point. You know, it's not like we're dealing with like Betamax and VHS where we're never going to get those two to meet, right? I mean, so it's yeah. we have options if we own it.
Right.
Okay.
It's all standardized, yeah.
Good. Even rail systems. As far as the hailstorms, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we're just getting more and more severe weather as the years go by because humanity. I shouldn't say obviously. If we had the third party option where we're leasing it from them, we're buying the power from them, if hailstorms damage the solar array, they would be replacing it. Like it would be, like, I mean, how does that work with hailstorms in either option if it gets damaged?
Insurance.
So I can answer that from my home standpoint. My solar panels are insured through my insurance company and they're on my roof.
Okay.
The guy that I bought them from, and I believe him because I trusted him to put my solar system in, said that they did analysis of these things where they dropped like baseballs from the sky on them, and they didn't damage them because I was worried about the exact same thing you're asking me about. So do you guys have any remarks as far as the, you know, the toughness of these things versus hailstorms and how that works?
Yeah, So I would say, Jeff, the same thing applies to commercial, what you just said. So actually, in either case, whether you own the system or not, like the system would most likely fall under your building insurance policy. And so a hailstorm would be an insurable event, right? So they would trigger a claim on your insurance policy. It's as far as these are outdoor, you know, pieces of infrastructure meant to withstand common hailstorms. But like if there is some extreme weather event, there can be some hail damage, and in that event, it would be an insurance claim. But it does take. I don't know. Baseball. I'm not sure exact size, but it would be a very large. Damage to a lot of our cars. You know, roof surface and things like this, right? So it's not, it wouldn't be unique to solar as far as this hail, this hail damage possibility.
Okay. Yeah, Brett.
Oh, sorry, did you?
No,
okay.
I was done.
Quick question, so I know I have to deal with this, and it's very dusty around here. Who's cleaning these like every 6 months? Because all that dirt and grime doesn't build up on them.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Jim. I mean, we can, but I would assume rain cleans them pretty well, doesn't it? Or not?
No, you need to get up there.
So we could put that into our general maintenance. I mean, that wouldn't be something we would ask the contractor to do. But, yeah, we could clean them up.
I thought so, too, and I waited a few years, and I didn't notice it, and then I cleaned them, and, like, my efficiency went right back up.
So really?
Slowly, and,
yeah. It gets some grime on it, huh?
It does get grime on it, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll be getting up on my roof.
It's fine. I got one more question, too. So after the 25 years, and if you don't replace them, I don't know anything about these, okay?
Sure.
So this is the reason why I'm asking these questions.
Yeah.
So is there something inside that you can replace, or would you have to replace the whole solar panel itself? You have to?
Yeah, the whole panel.
The whole panel would have to be replaced
at this point.
But you have the wires and the infrastructure and everything going to the boxes that you can reuse, I would assume, coming out off of the solar panels, all the everything that you put in to make them and energize. your building. But I would think you just have to replace the solar panels, right, Aaron, after a certain period of time?
That's correct, yeah.
So it would be the same cost as the beginning, right?
It would be a little less because we've already got it all tied into the grid. Okay. So we'd just be paying for the panels and the installation.
Maybe an inverter, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Anything else anybody has questions about? Dana, you want to say anything?
As you and I met with him, we basically asked all the questions that you guys are asking, which is great. Got a lot of trust with these guys as a third party to assist Jeff through the process. It's a great system. Certainly going to save money. I'm going to take a look at it at Elias next. Got a large roof over there. It burns a lot of electricity. Unfortunately, don't have geothermal like he does over here, but be hugely beneficial there. And depending upon the cost, and you know, we're hoping to work it into our capital plan for the future. So some other roofs are possible, but we have been taking a look at this and studying it for a while. But this is a great opportunity for Jeff and County Highway to put in a system. It's going to cost you $500,000 plus up front, but you're getting back almost within 6 months, 8 months, 200 plus thousand, 250. So that cost really is half of that. And then with your savings on electricity, it really makes it smart.
This is still a new building. It's going to last a long time. Oh, it's not like somewhere at once, maybe 50, 60 years.
Plus, it's got the new roof.
Yeah.
So, the system could last 30 years, 25. This roof should last 35 or 40 years at least. Weather, certainly. Conditions, who knows what's going to happen. We do have insurance that covers both the roof, and we would add the panels, obviously.
Yeah.
They are supposed to hold up to hail conditions, but if you get hail with a tornado or really strong shear winds and it's blowing that hail, who knows?
I have a question. Speaking of insurance, I know my insurance changes when I add stuff onto my house. Like, how much is this going to affect our insurance? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea yet. I need to talk to Deshauna and at Brookings, and she needs to reach out to our insurance company. I don't think it'll change that much.
Okay.
I mean, we're
pretty big.
We're pretty big.
Yeah.
In terms of our facilities, and I don't think this is going to add a heck of a lot.
Okay, good.
If anything.
Compared to dropping the bucket then, comparatively.
What's that?
Compared to dropping the bucket to where we already pay for everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Jeff, you say the panel's going to be insured. Did you have to notify your insurance agent?
Yeah, Dana will do that.
Yeah.
The facilities will notify our insurance agent, who will notify the insurance company. And we'll make sure that they're... So I think we're looking at spring to summer by the time we get this going, Aaron. Is that the right time frame?
Assuming we were to release the RFP, let's just say in the next month or so, I would think you'd be looking at a late summer, maybe early fall energization date. So there could be quite, on the commercial side compared to residential, there could be some additional time to interface with Ameren on the front end of the project. There's some kind of waiting game a little bit there. So yeah, late summer, early fall is what I would expect.
So once we get the RFP back, we choose a provider, we know what it's going to cost, then we would do a budget amendment to draw from the reserves from the Highway Department's funds in order to fund this upfront in 2025.
I don't see that being an issue at all.
So they would get all this together. We have this energy services agreement that is in your packet. It's gone before the state attorney's office. They made a few comments, and it was edited basically very little based on the state's attorney's comments. There's a resolution here authorizing me to sign this agreement with the company so that we can get rolling on this. And that's the action item that's actually on the agenda, is to approve that resolution so that I can sign the energy services agreement.
So moved. Straub.
Second. Carter.
Okay, been moved and second. Is there any discussion?
Great investment for the county.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Seems
more
like
of these.
Yep.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you, Becky and Aaron, for joining us. We appreciate it. And we look forward to working with you after this passes the county board on October the 24th. Officially, it has to go from Highway Committee to County Board. We'll be getting back with you and start the process.
Fantastic. Thank you all for the opportunity to chat with you today, and we look forward to seeing you in person very soon.
All right. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
All right. And that is all the items I have for the committee, Madam Chair.
Okay, any other business? Seeing there's no chair report, items go on designated item placed on the consent agenda would be.
Nine, ten, and 11
on the consent?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't solely have to go in front of the full board?
What's that?
Don't the solely have to go
Yeah, in? That was number 11.
Okay. Okay, 9, 10. 8, 9, and 10.
Well, 8, we just did a vote to... What was your...
Endorse.
Endorse. There we go. So that doesn't really go to the board. They were accepting of that from Kuat's.
So just 9 and 10.
9, 10, and 11.
And 11.
Yep.
Okay. Is there anything else that the committee needs to consider? If not, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next month.
All righty.
What other votes can we use the solar on before the government decides to change the rules again?
I know, right?
Now I'm going to start researching solar panels.
You should need to, because I don't, it's Ameren. I guess they're not making as much money because everybody's not figuring it out.